Cassie McCullough with you on Life Matters. Now, you're watching a movie and the hero or the heroine opens a laptop and bang, there's a symbol illuminated on the back. He or she then jumps into an amazing car and there's a close-up of the badge on the hood. Maybe they then casually drink a soft drink. And yes, we know what brand it is. Product placement, it's everywhere, and that's because it works. It sells products. But could it be also used to sell awareness about climate change? Adam Bumpus is one of RN's scientists in residence, one of our top five under 40 right now, and his research involves how movies can motivate us to take action on climate change. Welcome to Life Matters, Adam.
Thanks, Cassie. Good to be here.
Let's start with the actual science of how product placement works and actually how insidious it is, because we may not even know that we're being exposed to this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a way of communicating something really subtly that sort of goes into the subconscious when you're watching a film. And we all know those scenes where you look at it and you see everyone drinking a certain kind of soft drink and you think, wow, that is just a blatant product placement. But there's more subtle versions where people are, as you said, driving their certain car. And of course, this is in film a lot. We see James Bond with his classic car. We always know what it's going to be, more or less. And so we know what some of these things are. We kind of expect them in some ways. And so we're really seeing this as a way that marketers use a new medium in films to get their products across. And we're wondering, well, how might this work for something like climate change solutions?
Mm. So they actually offer opportunities to manufacturers and marketers, and that helps to bankroll the movies. There's not necessarily a kind of ideological move behind it.
No, not really. It's marketing and it's advertising that helps these products get out in new ways. We all know the way that media is changing in terms of our on-demand usage of media, and that change is what advertisers and marketers need to do to get their products out. So yes, it's about funding some of those parts in the films to enable them to get in there.
Mm. I think smoking is one of the ones that comes to my mind most quickly. And I remember seeing it in one of those kids' films with Will Smith, maybe Wild West or something. And every second screen, it seemed to have a particular cigarette company's ad on it. That's obviously slightly different. That's not just the product. That's about giving that habit cachet.
Yes, and that can be really dangerous. I mean, there's also that habit of using a lot of fuel. So, for example, you know, cars that burning a lot of gas is a really cool thing you see in films. When you watch Bullet with Steve McQueen, it's an older film, so it's got these classic old fantastic cars and they make a wonderful sound. And that gives it cachet and says, wow, to drive a big gas-guzzling car is a really cool thing to do. It's kind of like the nefarious side of looking at this in terms of what our society really values and why we see them in film.
I think you just explained the Fast and Furious franchise to me.
Yeah, I think so. As much gas as possible, we'll chuck in some nitro.
That's right. But onto this idea of climate change awareness and, well, the portrayal of climate catastrophe on screen, we are actually seeing more disaster movies in this vein. I'm thinking of a lot of the work actually of the director Roland Emmerich, who has a particular interest in putting climate catastrophe on screen, The Day After Tomorrow. And more recently, he'd Independence Day Resurgence. But he's had ice floes and all kinds of disaster imagery on his screens. And more recently, Fury Road, Mad Max, continued that idea of the kind of coming environmental apocalypse and the scarcity of water and petrol. Is this just emerging out of the kind of public imagination, or are these directed, do you think?
It's hard to tell whether it's coming from the public imagination or directed, and it's probably a little bit of both. But it is one of these things, if we're looking at something like climate change, that is the zeitgeist. It is this major issue that we all hear about now. We know a lot about it. We know that it's happening. We know that humans are driving it. And so to get that dramatic approach and that kind of emotional relief that you get within films, that are needed within films to get people to buy into them, climate change is a good thing to sort of use, because it is very dramatic in some cases. And if you take the full extension, for example, Mad Max Fury Road, a dystopian future driven by environmental challenges and environmental destruction, where people are begging for water, we can see that as something that's very, very emotive and very, very powerful. powerful to watch. And so it works as a very good device in Hollywood. But that is the climate catastrophe side of things. That is the easiest way to really talk about climate change is the real catastrophic, this is what's going to happen, this is something that's very dangerous, and this is something that could turn our society inside out.
So the portrayal of a bleak future. I mean, I guess there's a lot of natural drama in that, and it appeals to some kind of, well, fear, instinctive, innate fear we have about the end of the world being a possibility that we might see. But does it necessarily make for a great storyline? Actually, I'm thinking also of Divergent, that series, and The Hunger Games, which is tapping into a lot of adolescent anxiety about the way the world is right now, and the idea that we're on the brink of some kind of dystopian future, but that's due to government control rather than a fear of the climate catastrophe.
It's a really interesting point because these films are positioning a few people fighting against a major force, and that force is from government or other forces that have created this environmental destruction or this dystopian future. And so it does tell a really good story because it's about people taking action against something and fighting back. It's the classic story throughout history. You know, we see this in Star Wars. We see this in The Hunger Games. We see this in Mad Max, where people are fighting against a ruling group of organizations or ruling group of elites who have caused some destruction. And so I think for Hollywood, this does provide that classic narrative of the hero or the heroine pushing and fighting against something which is unjust. It obviously is really important for climate change, but we tend to focus on the impacts of climate change, the floods, the hurricanes, the droughts, rather than focusing on the causes of climate change, which are the emissions that we're burning from burning fossil fuels. Because it's a lot more dramatic to focus on the impacts, these huge calamitous storms, rather than focusing on what's going on in behind closed doors at governments and between corporations and what's happening in terms of our current economic paradigm, which is let's burn fossil fuels. The interesting thing here is for Hollywood is to figure out how can we talk about the politics that sit behind it, and also how do we make that interesting in terms of people fighting against climate change? And that is the key bit. The science tells us that if we focus just on the calamity, if we focus just on the things that are going wrong with these huge storms, the impacts of climate change, it scares people and it pushes them away from making behavioral change. And that's really important if films are to try and convey something that people can do about climate change rather than just be fearful of it.
On Life Matters, we're talking with Adam Bumpus, one of RN's top five under 40 scientists, who's on a mission really to co-opt Hollywood and filmmakers more broadly to send a message out through their work about climate change and awareness. Adam, are there any examples of what you're saying that have worked in the past? In my mind, when you were talking just before, I was thinking of Silkwood and Karen Silkwood's efforts to try and stop polluting practices in the factory or the plant where she worked.
There are good examples of this, and they've been used around the world in lots of different ways, not just in climate change. There's something called entertainment education, which is using soap operas, using comedies and dramas to change people's attitudes around certain social issues. For example, HIV prevention, mental illness, family planning, domestic violence are all examples of kinds of issues that have been addressed by this environment education. And this has been shown to be far more effective than the catastrophe side of things. There are some examples. Obviously, one of the most famous ones is An Inconvenient Truth from Al Gore, which was 10 years ago or so. But the interesting thing about that is that a study in Australia showed that people did actually have a reaction to it, and they did report significantly they would reduce their use of motorized vehicles and electricity than non-viewers. However, the study that took place kind of said, well, actually, this may be just correlation, not causation, because these people were probably already doing those things in the first place, and therefore they went to see the movie. So we're not seeing there the movie that's actually forcing people or forcing people to think about the way that they act about climate change. I think some good examples around this can be things like Interstellar that really showed people, wow, there's a dystopian future here that then can be changed to understand how people might react to it. So Interstellar doesn't mention climate change, but they're in this near future whereby there are drones that are everywhere. There are this huge problem with the land that it's not producing enough food. It's too dry. It's too windy. There are these huge storms. So it's very much a dystopian weather future. And the crux of the movie is there's going to be a space exploration to try and figure out a new planet to live on and how to save the Earth. And although not mentioning climate change, it shows the kind of near kind of impacts that we understand when, for example, there is a drought that happens now, that we understand the reaction to that from farmers. That's a really, really visceral and important reaction. And what that shows here is that, okay, it's catastrophe, but it's not the huge calamity that we see in some of the thing like The Day After Tomorrow. What we see here is something that's quite close to us. And so we can start to think, wow, that really makes a difference. And that, if we can communicate about climate change through that kind of lens, enables us to think, okay, we can do something about that because it's not too big to overcome. But of course, Interstellar didn't mention climate change. So
the you less have to put overt,
two and two together.
Yeah, the better. And in fact, also the film Avatar by James Cameron would be in that category where the blue people, I can't remember what they're called, but they are sort of fighting this land grab that's going on, and the diversity, the biodiversity of their community is disappearing or at threat because of this kind of imperialist move.
Yes, absolutely. By somebody.
Okay, now, Adam Bumpus, I'm going to be devil's advocate for a moment.
Sure.
A lot of people would find this, rather distasteful. And in fact, they might have good cause. We all know that the CIA has had a large role over the 20th century in forming public opinion in covert ways. I mean, it's documented they were in India and also Italy and Japan and taking roles in publishing houses and having covert actions in journalism to try and ironically promote democracy. Although some people would say that they were doing the opposite of that. And more recently, Trisha Jenkins, we had as a guest here at RN last year, who's written a book called The CIA in Hollywood, How the Agency Shapes Film and TV. This is a practice that's used often in ways that we aren't aware of. Do you find that problematic in what you're asking from filmmakers?
It's problematic when you ask anyone to do something when they don't know they're being asked to do it. I think that is a real challenge. Within this area for climate change, there's no silver bullet here, and there's no way that people can be convinced to do something dramatic that they're not doing already or not already thinking about. And so what I'm saying here about film and how we might communicate climate change through positive messages that enable people to take positive behavioral change is not just the only thing that needs to happen. What needs to happen is a suite of different communications from different people, from companies who are taking a stand to fight against climate change, which they are, from governments who are taking a stand to reduce our emissions, and from civil society, from everyone else, to think, how is this going to affect me and what can I do to change my behavior? I think the film part of this is to reflect what is happening in society as well. And that is to reflect that there are changes happening. And so the fact that Australia has more solar panels on roofs than any other country in the world, more than 15% of Australian households have solar, is a wonderful thing to talk about. But we don't tend to see that in the film because it's not seen as something that we should promote, or it's not seen as something that's really sexy for a lot of people.
But if I saw a pan across a suburb in an Australian movie and saw a whole lot of solar panels, I go, oh, hilarious. That's part of that funding thing that people are into about getting their message across in movies.
Potentially. And potentially then we see the hero, jump into a car that's a super fast electric car and speed off to save the person in distress. What we might see there is there are new technologies that are coming through which are incredibly cool. There's a new electric car that's being produced in the US. It's incredibly expensive. It's $600,000, so no one can afford it. But it looks like a Shelby Mustang from the 1960s. And this thing goes 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 3.3 seconds. It's nuts. It's a hugely fast car and it's very, very cool. And it will be wonderful to see those things in films where people can say, that's an aspirational part that I want. I'd like to move towards that. Now, we're probably not going to be able to afford those cars for a very, very long time. But the idea that people aspire to things and they're looking forward to finding solutions to something like climate change is essential. Rather than just saying, here's the doom and gloom of the problems, what we should be saying is, here are kind of things that are just really cool and really fun that people then want to engage in. And I think that solar panels are kind of like, okay, we got solar panels, that's great, but let's look for those things that are really fun and really engaging for the future. And how can they be used in movies to show that environment and climate change is not this completely dull thing that's going to happen. It's actually something that we can be part of and we can shape. And that, I think, is a great thing to have in a film.
Mm-hmm. Well, just before I leave my hesitations behind, I mean, sure. What about the purists' argument and that film is one of the most powerful artistic mediums that we have, and that it's a communal thing, that we view it together, and that it's able to really transmit some complex ideas in a very developed storytelling format. Why would I pay money to go to see a piece of art which I knew may well, in my view, be diluted or tampered with or contaminated from what it might have been if it didn't have this power exerted on it to give me a certain message?
It's a really good point. And the first rule here is that the film has to come first. The film, the story, the narrative, the emotion has to be the thing that drives it. We can have as much gadgets and technology in there as we want. And we've all seen those films with tons of gadgets and technology that we just walk away feeling nothing. So the film and the emotion has to be the primary driver of the film. I completely agree with you. And the interesting thing is, the science shows that if we just give information on films, no one gets the climate change message anyway. It's boring. It doesn't filter in. But if we convey a message and a story through emotion and characters that people can relate to, then the story comes alive. And so I don't think it's one or the other. I think actually it's saying, well, hey, here's this thing that is affecting the world. It's affecting a lot of people. It is dramatic and it is dangerous, and it is something that we should care about. That is an interesting piece of society to put into art, into film. And I think what's interesting here also is that from the film industry, there is a lot of movement to green the film industry.
And you actually presented to filmmakers in America last year to press this case.
Yes, absolutely. So last year, hosted by the World Bank in Washington, D.C., they brought together film producers, film directors from Hotel Rwanda, The Constant Garden, A City of God, some major films, and people from the White House, people from academia to talk through what is climate change communications 2.0. How can we push this agenda through, not through a way of saying this is everything's got to change in order for people to do films, but to say how can film be used to help people understand the issues of climate change in a way that they're enjoying, and in a way that they can actually say, I can do something about it. And what was really great about that discussion is that it came back to people. It came back to saying, well, what do people want? Well, people want a safe environment. They want a safe climate. They want to live and not spend so much money on their energy bill. They want to do all lots of things that actually go hand in hand with climate change solutions. Now, if we can wrap that up into something that's emotionally engaging and really hits people where they feel it, that is something that's very powerful for both film and for the climate change agenda in terms of getting us off fossil fuels and helping us survive into the future.
It's utterly fascinating, Adam. I'm really quite taken with the idea, despite what might sound like a bit of resistance from me. Now, you mentioned the World Bank, and last year you were in Paris for the climate change talks. And now the World Bank is sponsoring a video competition in this vein. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting competition. It's the second time they've done it. And the first time was really successful because it talked about how can people explain the climate change issue from their own personal point of view and how can they get that to the world. And so this year, they're running a competition called Film for Climate, and it is about getting young people to explain what they feel about climate change. What are the solutions to climate change? What are the things that are affecting them? How can they communicate that as a personal story to the world? And so what they'd love to hear from are young filmmakers from the age of 14 to 35 to do a sort of 1 minute public service announcement or sort of more 5 minute documentary or comedy or drama or whatever that filmmaker believes is important and a way to communicate climate change. And they want to hear this and they want to get these stories of the youth onto the world stage. And this is a great thing to do because It's really about saying these are the future of the world. The future generations are the ones that are going to inhabit the world with climate change. And they're the ones who are going to help make these solutions real. And so if we can get these young filmmakers to come forward and just record quickly, it doesn't even have to be an amazing quality. It just has to be a story that they believe is important. And then upload it to their website. And there is the judging panel is amazing. It's Bernardo Bertolucci who's hosting it, producers from Hollywood and directors from Hollywood talking about the issue of climate change. And they will be judging these films in this competition to really say what films are talking about climate change in the very best and very most engaging ways. And so get it on camera and send it in. It'll be wonderful to see these. And they really want stories from all over Australia, and they would love to see stories from New Zealand and Pacific Islands as well. This is an area of the world where impacts are really strong, and so we should be telling that story as best we can.
And a chance to get your work in front of people such as Bernardo Bertolucci. Adam, your enthusiasm is infectious. Thank you so much for bringing this idea to us, and good luck with following it through.
Cassie, thank you so much for having me on. It's really exciting to be here. And we are on a cusp of this massive change, and it's going to be amazing. There's some really great stuff going to happen.
That's Adam Bumpus. He's one of our top five under 40 scientists in residence here at RN. We'll obviously put more links to his work on the Life Matters program page, as well as somewhere where you can submit an entry or at least send it on to someone you know who might be interested in doing it.